Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Judge Van Dyke, and welcome to my chambers. I'm making this video as part of my opinion in the Duncan v. Bonta case. In this case, the state of California made the argument, which the majority has now accepted, that a magazine holding more than 10 rounds is just an accessory, not an arm protected by the Second Amendment's right of the people to keep and bear arms. I think anyone with a basic familiarity with firearms could show you that this attempted distinction is simply inconsistent with reality.
So I have a new hero. I'm back, Andrew McKay. Yeah, my voice is all a mess. I don't know. This is two times in 3 or 4 months that I've had any kind of laryngitis. It's on the clearing side, so that's good. But if I sound weird, it's not your radio. It's not your ears. It isn't. And it's the source. Okay. the judge here. Okay. This is Judge Van Dyke from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and basically, you have California has a gun control law that bans gun magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. Okay, I mean, a very standard kind of gun control concept that, you know, no semi-automatic weapon ought to be available that has a 12 or a 15 or a 17 or a 21 or a 50 or, you know, whatever. There's all different kinds of magazine sizes. And the appeals court, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, had ruled 7-4 that this law was permissible under the Second Amendment because large capacity or high capacity magazines are not considered arms or protected accessories. Okay, because remember the Second Amendment says, you know, right, the necessary or the a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, right? So shall not be infringed. Well, their argument is a 17 or a 21 round magazine like comes standard with the particular the one he was demonstrating it is not an arm. It's an accessory. And you can regulate non-essential accessories. Therefore, it's okay to prohibit the standard 17 or 21 round magazine that comes with, you know, this particular gun. And he says that this makes no sense. Okay. And he played, and he did, it's weird to do a video dissent, but he thought, you know what? I just think people don't understand guns well enough for me to really make the point unless I show you in my chambers all of these different guns. Which is what he did. He showed us all these guns and how they work. And if you don't understand guns, which is common for people who don't, you know, use guns a lot, even I learned some things from watching him, and I consider myself a well enough experienced, you know, gun user. But, you know, he knows more than I do, and I thought that was interesting too. So he played a clip from the oral argument where he was grilling the attorney defending the law for the state. And now, this he could have made the whole video, but then he goes on to explain. Here's from the oral arguments.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because
yes, Your Honor.
So the way you're treating magazines, it seems like you could use the same sort of rationale as between a non-semi-automatic firearm, say a lever action or a bolt action or a revolver type action, and a semi-automatic firearm. So I'm trying to figure out if you're saying, well, what we do is we say, have people ever banned particularly dangerous rounds, and now we're saying large capacity magazines are particularly dangerous. Why couldn't that same reasoning be used to ban semi-automatic firearms altogether? To say, because I mean, think about it, like during the Revolutionary War, if the United States had semi-automatic firearms that only held 5 to 10 rounds, it'd have been about 10 minutes and it would have been over, right? As against muskets. So clearly, the semi-automatic mechanism is way, 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 way more particularly dangerous than the difference, the delta between a 10-round magazine and a 15-round magazine. So why does your reasoning not mean that, if this reasoning works, why does your reasoning not mean that a state could just ban the semi-automatic firearms altogether?
Now, I know if you're not a gun person, some of these terms are a little bit unfamiliar. If you are a gun person, a lot of this is pretty basic. But his argument goes like this. There's all kinds of mechanisms for a pistol. The revolver is the one where you take the chamber out, the cylinder out, you put 6 or sometimes 8 or sometimes 5 bullets into it, you put it back in, then you either pull the trigger or you pull the like the hammer back and you shoot it. Okay, you've all seen Westerns. You've all seen Dirty Harry, or maybe you haven't if you're under 40. I don't know. That's one kind of weapon. That weapon is fairly slow, and it's very challenging time and physicality-wise to reload it. So when you use up your six, let's say, standard, you know, you have to take the cylinder out, you have to angle the gun back, you have to put a new one, even if you have a speed loader, which means that they're all kind of held in place for you by a little device, it's still fairly slow. And then you can put six more in, and then you can go shooting again. A lever action is just like an old old rifle. And there are lever action pistols, not very common. But a lever action would be where it's got, five or six maybe, typical, inside the gun or in a pistol, maybe fewer. And you literally move a mechanism underneath the trigger in order to, like an old rifle, like think of a Winchester or something like that from old movies, in order to load another round, okay? You also have single shot or double shot pistols. There's all kinds of different mechanisms. And then you have the semi-automatic. Semi-automatic is the kind of weapon where you put in a magazine that carries, you know, typical is 10, okay? Many also have 17, 20 is very typical. Bigger than that's very uncommon, but you can buy them. They're not all that useful functionality-wise because they stick out of the handle and so forth. And what he's saying is that the additional lethality of a semi-automatic handgun with a 15-round or a 17-round magazine as opposed to a 10 is significant, but not nearly as significant as the difference between a semi-automatic weapon and a revolver, let's say 10 versus 6, plus the slowness of the mechanism. He says, look, if you can ban the magazine size because it's increased lethality, why can't you ban the semi-automatic pistol altogether as opposed to revolvers? That's what he's getting at.
So if we're just start talking, Your Honor, about this initial sort of textual question, I think if you're dealing with a semi-automatic, that would fit the definition of an arm.
No, but that semi-automatic could be a revolver. Like it could be, I mean, just like this, that high capacity magazine could be a lower capacity magazine.
Right, Your Honor. So I think that would fit the definition of arm, and then you'd move on to the other aspects of the Bruin analysis.
But that's what he's getting at, is that the definition of arm doesn't make any sense. Because without the magazine, it's not a gun. It can't do anything. You can put one in the chamber, rack the slide, take out the magazine, and you could shoot one bullet, okay? But generally speaking, unless you use the magazine, you can do nothing with that gun. So the magazine is essential to it being an arm. Without the magazine, it's not an arm. And that's when he's kind of make the point that things that make the gun more lethal, you're saying anything that makes the gun more lethal can be regulated as an accessory. Well, where is the limit on that? We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
Still rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. Not seeing any delays at all. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. By the way, storms all around us, but not here.
I know.
It's like everything that's part of a panhandle. From west of, like, I don't know, Eglin-ish, all the way over to Louisiana is all clear. But there's this U west, north, and east of that box that is horrible storms right now. So we'll just take the calm that we've gotten. It's all moving west to east, so it doesn't look like it's going to hit us, if not till much later in the day. Anyway, back to the oral arguments, because part of the oral argument was to make the point about where's the line on this scale. Your line drawing doesn't make any sense. Also, you don't understand guns.
That's important, because your argument turns on whether you can characterize an accessory. So you would say that the revolver versus semi-automatic is not an accessory, but that a magazine is an accessory. So what would you think about like a red dot sight, you know, electro optics, which many, many firearms are going to electronic optics nowadays. They're obviously an accessory because you could have iron sights. Could you ban those?
Well, so, Your Honor, I'm not intimately familiar with that, and I do want to answer this question and make sure that I save time for rebuttal.
The lawyer for the state of California defending a gun control law doesn't know what a red dot sight is. John, A, is that outrageous?
That is more than outrageous.
B, is that surprising?
No.
No, not really.
No, not at all.
He doesn't know guns. He's just a lawyer. And so if you don't know guns, typically what they call an iron sight means that you have a little device on the rear of the gun, if we're talking about a pistol, right in front of the hammer, and you have another device on the front of the gun, and you line those up, and those sights tell you where the gun's going to shoot. If you've ever used a gun, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you've never used a gun, you're probably like, okay, fine, talk to me like I'm a child. I did. I don't know what else to say.
And I love my red dot. I've got it on.
I'm not a fan of it, but I haven't used it enough to get familiar with it. But I know everybody loves them.
Yes.
I'm sure I would love them. The idea of the Red Dot site is that you're looking through like the pane of a window, a very, very small window, and the gun will actually almost pretend it's putting the little laser dot on your target, even though it doesn't actually put out a laser dot on your target. It just lets your eye believe that there is. So all you do is you basically put that on this little tiny window pane. You put a red dot over your target and you pull the trigger. So it's faster and it's more accurate. You don't have to line up two different things. It's very easy to use if you're used to it. And that's his point is, well, that makes the gun more lethal. Why can't we regulate that as an accessory? And the council didn't even know what a red dot sight was, which is just crushingly embarrassing for both him and probably for many of the justices on the panel who don't know either. So back in chambers, Van Dyke says,
"Now, from this exchange, it became clear to me that many, including both California's counsel and my colleagues in the majority in this case, lack the basic familiarity with firearms to understand the inherent shortcomings and obvious inadministrability of the test that California was proposing, and which the majority in this case has now adopted."
So I'm going to explain it to you like you're a child, which is good, which is good. And he says, you know, look, I was going to write it, but I realized that showing is better than telling. And he apologizes for the production value of the video, which is, like he says, probably his first time ever. And also,
"I also want to emphasize that for safety purposes, I have rendered inoperable all the guns and gun parts that I use to demonstrate today."
So a very, very expert gun user is telling you, "I've taken out the firing pins of all these guns, so you don't need to be scared when you're watching the video at home on the YouTube that somehow I'm going to endanger you." It's so snarky. I love it. So then,
"To demonstrate, I'm going to start with this SIG P320 that's basically in its stock configuration. That is, this gun is basically in the same configuration it would come to you from the manufacturer and be sold to you at a retailer. This is one of the most popular handguns currently on the market in the United States. And so I'm going to use this to point out some of the essential parts of a handgun. These same parts would exist on pretty much every handgun, at least of this semi-automatic type. So let me start by pointing out a few of them. This one comes with a standard 21-round magazine. Comes from factory just like that. You can buy a similar version that comes with a 17-round magazine that fits flush.
But it doesn't even come with a 10-round magazine. Now, I don't own a SIG P320. I think that's what I might have used at the training, because that's what a lot of the cops are going to now. It's a very, very, very standard arm. It's a semi-automatic weapon, and as he said, the standard magazine comes from the factory 17. The 21 pokes out just a little bit from the handle. And he says, well, look, California argues that the 17 or the 21-round magazine that's standard from the factory is not protected by the Second Amendment because it's not included in the definition of an arm. You have to go out of your way to buy a less functional magazine, a 10-round. Presumably that'd be a single stack, so the bullets are right on top of each other instead of zigzag stacked the way they would be probably in that particular pistol configuration. And he says, but this is ridiculous. Literally every single part of this gun could be made in a less usable way. And every single part of this gun, therefore, could theoretically be set to a lower standard of functionality by the law. And you could require people to purchase less effective versions of every part of this gun, down to and including the firing control unit, which is like and he takes it out and he's like, this is a firing control unit. You can see, you can't actually use this. You wouldn't be able to shoot anybody with this. But this is the basic workings of the gun. It's the trigger and the spring and, you know, what connects to the barrel. And he says, look, this is ridiculous. There's no logical way to talk about guns the way they're talking about guns. And so instead,
ultimately, California's argument, which the majority has unwisely adopted here, is based on the unstated assumption that there's some basic, I guess, unadorned, without any accessories, firearm that would be protected as an arm under the text of the Second Amendment, but everything else is merely an unprotected accessory that's been added to that firearm that's unprotected.
And the problem is, and this is a real challenge for the law, what's a gun? What's an arm? The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But what's an arm? Is a scope an arm? Well, it's an accessory. Is a high-capacity, so-called high-capacity magazine an arm? Well, they're saying it's an accessory. And he's saying, if that's an accessory, then what isn't an accessory? Literally everything's an accessory, down to and including things like the spring and the trigger design, because you can customize those too for different environments and make them more or less functional, more or less dangerous. A good gun in the hand of a good person does good things, and a gun in the hand of a bad person does bad things. A more effective gun in the hand of a bad person does more bad things, but a well-designed gun in the hand of a good person does more good things. And what is the gun? And so he's giving this video demonstration of how guns work, which I thought was great, which most gun control people do not tend to understand normally. Some do. And also, it was a little bit snarky. And also, it was kind of entertaining. And also, logically, he's right. So there you go. That was a lesson from the dissenting chambers of a judge in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for the state of California, who that panel, that appeals court, did approve the law. And they did say that it is an accessory. And he says, y'all are silly and don't know anything. 625 on News Radio 9. And John, as a gun user, would you say, y'all are silly and you don't know anything?
Right. I mean, just speechless, man. Speechless.
And it was brilliant. And then the majority said, well, that's not an appropriate dissent.
I love your arms.
How dare you? How dare you try to teach us what we don't know about guns? Well, sir, do better. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. But if you're on Highway 29 going northbound, approaching the Airport Boulevard light right there, you're going to see about a 5 to 7 minute delay, just congestion right there. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Oh. When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
You know, when I talk about Frontier Motors, and you hear Dave Ramsey talk about Frontier Motors, we always talk about the selection and the reliability and good people you can trust, and they want you to be a customer for life, not just one time. I mean, all that's true, okay? But maybe think about Frontier as maybe a little bit different kind of a service. And what I mean is, when you're thinking about buying a car, what's the normal way you do this? You decide for yourself what you like, and you decide for yourself based on reviews or whatever, what you've driven or whatever, and you know, you talk to friends. I don't know. Everybody does a little bit differently. And then you kind of go into this semi-adversarial relationship with the people who sell cars, and you try to get from them the thing that you want. Well, okay, that's one approach. How about you try this? Go to Frontier and say, here's my need, here's what I do, here's how often I commute. What advice do you have for me? What kind of a car would you recommend for me? Or, you know what's out there, what's good quality and a couple of years old with a few thousand miles on it. What do you recommend? What do you have in stock? And let them guide you. Now, you don't have to, you know, take their guidance, but maybe find out. Because they're the experts, and they can do that for you. They can help you figure out what you can afford, what's going to work for you, what you're going to like, what people are telling them they like, and all that. So maybe think about Frontier a little bit different way, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway, be sure to tell them Andrew McKay said hi.
The Sanger Theater opened her doors on April 2nd, 1925. For 100 years, she's been the heart of Pensacola entertainment with vaudeville, movies, Broadway, and music. This month, Friends of the Sanger and the City of Pensacola are saying happy birthday to the Sanger, and we invite you to help us celebrate. Learn more about these events at pensacolasanger.com/100. And happy birthday, Sanger.
The Studer Community Institute, with many others, is dedicated to creating America's first early learning city right here in Pensacola. To do that, Rishi and I built the United States' first early learning sensory garden right at the corner of Bailing Street and Main Street. Yep, right by the Brew Through. Bring your child. Not only will they have fun, but they'll also learn a lot. And while you're there, you can have a coffee or a smoothie or a bite to eat. So please, bring your child down to the Brew Through to the Early Learning Sensory Garden. Thank you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk. Mornings at 9, right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Thank you very much.
Oh, defining character, Lotka on Taxi. And if you're under 40, you don't know what I'm talking about. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, U.S. and Russian diplomats are meeting in Saudi Arabia today to discuss a potential ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. The U.S. is looking to negotiate a naval ceasefire in the Black Sea, then move on to a more comprehensive agreement. There's a couple of wildfires in western North Carolina. The fires are each larger than 2,000 acres. They doubled in size yesterday. They look like they're centered in Polk County. Some mandatory evacuation orders were issued over the weekend for some parts of that area. And we've got an update today on Pope Francis. Apparently, he is now back at the Vatican after being released from the hospital over the weekend. He did make a brief public appearance for the first time in more than 5 weeks, waving to a crowd from a balcony at a hospital in Rome.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. That's good news. We will take it for sure. I have tickets to give away. Ballet Pensacola is performing Don Quixote. I don't know how we're supposed to say that in Pensacola because sometimes we say things differently here. If it's Bayou Tahar, I suppose it could be Don Quixote. Anyway, I have tickets to give away March 28th through the 30th, April 4th through the 6th at PLT. Be caller number 2 and you can go watch the ballet right here at PLT.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. There are U.S.-led ceasefire talks happening in Saudi Arabia. Negotiators meeting with Ukraine's President Zelensky's team last night, the Russians today.
In one room, they're meeting representatives of Russian President Vladimir Putin. In another, a team sent by Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky. The plan is to discuss with the Russians ways to ensure safety for ships in the Black Sea to Ukraine's south. There will be what President Zelensky describes as shuttle diplomacy with his own diplomats.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Venezuelan migrants in the U.S. illegally are flown home.
President Nicolas Maduro halted flights earlier this month. Venezuelan officials say a deal with the U.S. had been reached. The Department of Homeland Security says the first flight had 199 people, including some whom the administration says are suspected gang members.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. Mia Love, the first Republican black woman elected to Congress, died. She was 49 years old. Her family said brain cancer was no longer responding to treatment. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31. At News Radio 92.3, right now it's mostly cloudy and 65 degrees in Pensacola. A violent altercation just down the coastline left two people in their 60s injured after being assaulted, allegedly, by several juveniles and an 18-year-old in Rosemary Beach. Walton County officials say this all started when two intoxicated juveniles approached the victims, who were on their own porch, and offered to sell them alcohol. When the victims attempted to escort them off of the property, one of the juveniles started punching one of the victims in the face. Other family members then attempted to defuse the situation, and other juveniles joined in on the fight. Two people in their 60s were ultimately hurt. They had bruising, and one had a chipped tooth. One adult also broke their arm in the scuffle. Four suspects were arrested. They've been charged with battery. A young man that reported being abused by a local priest at St. John the Evangelist Private School has now settled his case with the Catholic Diocese of Pensacola-Tallahassee. While the details are confidential due to a non-disclosure agreement, he did say he was comfortable with the outcome of the case. The victim and his mother said that he was targeted by the priest after transferring schools to escape bullying. Although law enforcement confirmed the statute of limitations had expired for criminal charges, they filed a report to address the impact that the abuse had on his life. The victim is now in his 20s, says he's planning to enlist in the military and to attend college. A fire at a vacant Pensacola home is being investigated as a possible arson. That happened Sunday morning at a home on North W. No injuries have been reported. Fire officials say there may have been squatters in the home at the time of the fire. An arson investigation is currently underway. Two people were hurt in a T-bone crash on Highway 29 near International Paper on Friday. The crash involved two pickup trucks. There's no word on the extent of their injuries or their current conditions. FHP is currently investigating the cause of that fire. A Bay County aquarium is coming under scrutiny after four dolphins have died in the last 6 months. The FWC says officials from the Gulf World Marine Park in Panama City Beach blocked their inspectors from the dolphin enclosure. FWC says they have concerns about how those dolphins are being treated. They want to do a wellness check. State Representative Griff Griffiths said he's concerned about the welfare of the animals as well. He's reaching out to the appropriate state and federal agencies. A veterans organization was working over the weekend to clean up Veterans Memorial Plaza in Milton. Irreverent Warriors, they were working to clean up the park and also raising some money to prevent veteran suicides.
I think the most popular number you hear kind of thrown around is 22 military and veterans a day commit suicide. G56. And for me, honestly, I don't squabble about the numbers. The latest VA report, or VF, the latest VA report came out, and it looks like the numbers are not improving.
And that's Nate McDonald. He's the director of operations for that organization. The group also holds events that they call silky runs, and that's when the vets wear their old PT uniforms, go for a run or a hike to raise money for the same cause. It is 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
Brought to you by the Watson Law Firm. If you've been injured in a car accident, visit watsonfirm.com. Couple accidents just popped on the board right now. If you're on 98 in Tiger Point Park, I'm seeing an accident there. No road blockage associated with that one. And also Davis Highway and Atwood Drive, no roadblock with that one either. But we're starting to see some delays on Davis, both north and southbound. So just be aware of that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be looking at some wet weather as we go through the morning and the afternoon hours. 80% chance of rain with a high near 75 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58. More sunshine on Tuesday with a high near 76 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 59. Keeping sunshine around on Wednesday with a high near 81 and a low near 56. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 65 degrees across the area. We've got cloudy skies. And our next news is at 7. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields were higher this morning on reports President Trump was backing off of an all-out trade war, raising hope the U.S. economy could keep its expansion going. The benchmark 10-year Treasury note yield rose more than 3 basis points to 4.282%. The British government has ordered an investigation into the country's energy resilience after an electrical substation fire shut Heathrow Airport for almost a day and raised concerns about the UK's ability to withstand disasters or attacks on critical infrastructure. Johnson & Johnson says it will invest more than $55 billion within the U.S. over the next 4 years, including four new manufacturing plants. Johnson & Johnson said it is a 25% increase in investment compared with the prior 4 years and estimates the U.S. economic impact will be more than $100 billion per year. Futures are sharply higher. Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 32, the NASDAQ up 92. That's Your Money Now.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that's Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry, gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. Emerald Coast Coins on Creighton Road.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Yes, good morning, Chair Kissel and trustees. In this first information item, we wanted to provide an update on programs that will be removed from and added to the catalog in fall 2025. The Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies specialization under the Interdisciplinary Humanities Degree SIP code and similarly named minor are being removed due to significant decreases in enrollment over the past decade and to comply with Florida Statute 101007.25 and Bog Reg 9.016.
All right, some words you're going to need to know. This is Vice Provost Dr. Dallas Snyder. Bog is Board of Governors. That's the overarching body that regulates the state university system in the state of Florida, including FSU, UF, UCF, and, of course, UWF. And so when they talk about Bog regulations, that's what they're talking about, the Board of Governors regulations for the entire university system in the state of Florida. That's not really all that important to understand, but it's going to come up a couple other times, so it's just kind of a shorthand word that you may not know. This is the Board of Trustees meeting for the University of West Florida Board of Trustees. This is their meeting in February. So with the new appointees, some of whom who have actually been confirmed, some of whom who have not, and the controversy surrounding the governor's appointments, I actually went and watched the first meeting in January where they selected Scott Yenner to be the chair. I watched this February meeting where they did some business, and then I watched the March meeting that just took place last week where they did some more business. And let me just tell you from personal experience, there's no meeting in the world that is more boring than the Board of Trustees meetings for the UWF. I had not watched any before. I thank my lucky stars I never had to. It's kind of like watching a school board meeting. You know how school board meetings, sometimes there's like parts of it that are interesting to the average person, controversial issues or whatever. And then most of it, you're like, I don't even know what they're talking about. It's just so insider baseball kind of stuff. And that's true because they're just doing business. And a lot of the business is very technical and you don't care. I tried to highlight for you some of the things that you might care about, because my goal today, by the way, is to give you perspective on the whole question of the new UWF board and whether you should be worried, how worried you should be, and so forth. Because I think that I don't know that anybody's really done this, okay? And my job as a talk show host is to do the things that nobody else is really doing. So I went and watched the meetings out of curiosity. Like, how bad is it? Well, as you heard there, Dr. Dallas Snyder's explaining that the women's gender and sexuality specialization is going away because nobody uses it anymore. Also because we have these new rules about what you can and cannot study in schools. And you might think, oh God, no, we're losing one. Okay, whatever. But we're adding two.
The two new undergraduate programs are the BS in Civil Engineering and the BFA in Graphic Design and Digital Media, which I will present in our next few agenda items.
The Civil Engineering one is cool. This is a very good thing, although it's off to a halting start just because it's hard to start a program. You know, you've got people who want to join, and if they're juniors and you're only offering the freshman courses, like, it's hard to roll out a new program, just like it's hard to start a university. Just once it gets going, it's fine, but hard to start a new thing. And then the Bachelor of Fine Arts in Digital Design. I mean, cool. These are two new things that we're adding. Alonzi Scott, who's one of the pre-existing board members.
Yeah, I'm interested in the Bachelor of Civil Engineering for several reasons. One, it's something our nation needs and we seem to be lacking in a lot of areas. At some point, I'd like to have the West Florida folks take a look at something called shipbuilding, because it's an area where our nation is grossly behind the rest of our adversaries. So that, and being in the West Florida community, that might be something we should think about as another engineering concept.
And so Alonzi Scott, who, by the way, is one of the pre-existing folks, he's been on the board since 2018. Oddly, it looks like his appointment has expired. I'm not quite sure, because 2023 on the website is what it says. But he got a bachelor's and a master's from UWF, executive leadership certificate from Cornell, Navy non-appropriated unlimited contracting warrant and contracting officer representative. Like, he actually is a native of Sneed's, now resides in Arlington, but obviously he's been here, okay? So he's one of the pre-existing board members. He doesn't live here now, but he has great familiarity with UWF. You don't have to live here to be on the board. Okay, so I tell you that only because he's exactly right. I would love to see us have a shipbuilding program at UWF. Man, that'd be great. And we have a lot of resources that would fit that. You know, Austell is right down the road. Panama City's right down the road. Of course, we got Joe Patty here. They build, you know, barges or tugs here. I mean, it would be a really good thing down the road. It's an interesting idea. What I wanted to share with you is some of the other clips, because people are very scared about what the new board is going to do to UWF. You know, it's a very high-functioning school right now, especially given kind of what it is in the grand scheme of universities, UWF. It's outperforming its nature very, very well right now. And the worry is you're going to have people come in and break a thing that's working, right? That's the worry. I'm not as worried anymore, but I still have my, like, you know, that's kind of my approach to this. I'll tell you why in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. Even Highway 90 and 98, I'm seeing no delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned. You know, you have trustees who've never been here, although some of them have now, had never been here before, had not graduated UWF, don't know the culture, don't know the school, and it felt like a hostile takeover, including if you watch the January meeting, it very much felt like a hostile takeover. Okay, I mean, a little nice on the surface, but the underlying thing was the people from the governor and the board of governors have come in and we're in charge now. And you think, what in the world? I thought we had a pretty good school already. What are you trying to fix? It's not broken. Okay, Adam Kissel has been one of the semi-controversial figures because of allegations about his views about particularly the GI Bill. Okay, this is Adam Kissel talking about... And it doesn't, the particular subject here doesn't matter as much, but it had to do with transfer credits and, you know, which certification organization we should and shouldn't use. And the details here don't really matter too much. It's a little bit complicated. It's an important issue, but the details don't matter a whole lot. I want you to pay attention to the level of knowledge that Adam Kissel brings to this conversation, because he's one of the controversy ones, okay? Not as controversial as Scott Yenner, but one of the controversial ones. And I just want you to listen to what he brings to the conversation.
For UWF, there's a scholar named Preston Cooper who has done for thousands of programs and degrees what the return on investment is. He finds that there are many programs across the country. Once you do the counterfactual as well, what would this person have done even without their degree, that are a negative return on investment for the student. So by the time they've paid their tuition, So for instance, and I don't want to name particular programs here because I don't have them in front of me, but there are some that fail Preston Cooper's return on investment test, which is not going to be identical to the federal test. What he does find is that psychology bachelor's programs in general have the lowest return on investment. Unless you're going to go into graduate work in psychology, there's not a lot of things that you can do that really make your psychology degree pay off for you. Obviously, there are skills that you get that help you later in life, and there's knowledge that you have uniquely because it's a psychology degree, but your ROI is negative, all things considered, for lots of psychology degrees around the country. So that might be the case for us. It might be the case for some of the other programs that we have by the Preston Cooper standard. Again, may not be as bad by the federal standard, which is probably a lower standard.
Okay, sorry, I gave you the wrong context. He's talking about new federal regulations about which degrees are and are not going to get funding mostly. The other topic about accreditation actually came up in the subsequent meeting last week. But still, the point is, does he sound smart or dumb? He's talking about the return on investment of various degrees, psychology being the worst of all of them. And he's saying that, look, paying attention to how things, you know, return on investment is an important question within education. By the way, not the only question, and he acknowledges that because there's a, kind of this, maybe he's coming in with the ruthless mindset of eliminating all of the programs of what you might call the liberal arts because they don't, you know, they don't help you make a lot of money. Speaking as a holder of a philosophy and a political science degree, I can confirm, you know, they don't pay all that well. And that's been one of the arguments over the years is, shouldn't the publicly funded education system be producing better value in the out product? And better value would seem to indicate better money. And, you know, sometimes you can't measure product in money. Making people better people is a different kind of thing than making people better at a particular paying industry. That's true. But still, okay, back to just the point of all this was to get you familiar with a couple of these people. Adam Kissel, again, one of the controversial figures.
It's mostly theology programs, helping profession type programs, social work that have very bad economic outcomes despite having very good social outcomes. And those are the kinds of programs that I think are going to lose their federal funding under the CCRA. And so what I've been saying to presidents of religious colleges is, if you want your degrees to be taken as something other than just an economic investment, you've got to speak up.
Which is, a great way of thinking about your degree. Are you building a person or are you building a cog? Are you building somebody who's got a skill, which in which case it's basically a high-end trade, okay? Engineering is a high-end trade, right? You're not building better people. You're building people who build things, okay? Whereas the traditional argument for the liberal arts and humanities is we're building better people, better citizens. And what he's saying is, look, if the evaluative matrix on people is going to be on degrees, is going to be, you know, what's your outcome in terms of money, well, you need to have a better way of selling what you do if you want to protect that thing or, you know, find support for that thing, which is, of course, okay? And then Scott Yenner, the most controversial of the appointees, he's the current chair of the board, although unapproved, which is a bizarre system. How you can be serving on a board and be making votes and running meetings and you haven't even been confirmed by the Senate is beyond me. That is an architecture that makes no sense to a checks and balances system guy like I am, and I believe Florida ought to be as a member of the United States. But okay, he is, and apparently the governor's not even going to put him up for confirmation by the Senate committee. I mean, we'll see. It's a weird place. But here's what he said.
Economic outcomes are going to be part of how we evaluate any program, it seems to me, under federal law or any good fiduciary committee. But it's important for, to recognize that education has other outcomes. And the university's mission statement really needs to be clear on what the goals of that education are so that we can justify so-called uneconomical academic programs in light of the purpose of the institution that we have articulated.
Absolutely. What he's saying... I hate to translate for those of you who already understand, but what Scott Yenner is saying is that, you know, some degree programs are measured by the fact that when you graduate, you have, let's say, $30,000 worth of debt, but you're now making 80 grand when had you not gone to school, you'd be making 50 grand. That's a $30,000 a year delta. You're going to pay off, I mean, theoretically, you could pay off your student debt in 1 year, and every year after that, you'd be plus 30,000. So that's economically good return on investment. Other degrees, let's say philosophy, where you have $30,000 worth of debt and your delta is that had you not gone to the university, you might have gone to trade school and made 70 grand. Instead, you're waiting tables making 50 grand. Good. I mean, you know, some do. Okay. Let's say 40, whatever. And you're actually down money every year and you're paying off student debt. That's a negative ROI. That's what he's getting at. Okay. But theoretically, if you've gotten your philosophy degree, you're a better person, and maybe those things, I mean, having a philosophy degree, I can say that having a philosophy degree does not make you, in the current architecture of our university system, does not make you a better person. Trust me. more on that another time if you want. But even theoretically, it makes you a more enlightened, aware, better citizen, better participant in democracy, better servant of the public, whatever, okay? Better at critical thinking, able to solve problems, and so forth. maybe you make less money, but you're still useful in other non-measurable ways. And Scott Jenner is saying, well, that's important too. And we need to have that as part of our, you know, mission statement. And then Adam Kissel says,
I was looking at the mission statement of a university in Missouri a couple of years ago, and they said, come here because we meet all the accreditation requirements. That's not very inspiring. And the university across the way, also in Missouri, said, come here and we'll help you become a better person prepared for life, right? So the mission statement really does matter for advertising and enrollment purposes. So I don't know if that's academic affairs either, but saying what we are and why people should want to come and get what we offer makes a lot of sense.
He's absolutely right. Okay, the reason I played those clips, and I'll play more next hour from the March meeting, the reason I played those for you is I want you to form your own opinion about whether you think Adam Kissel, the kind of raspy voice guy, sounds like me today, or Scott Jenner, the more clear voice guy, because he was, that Zoom meeting was very clear. Do they sound smart or they sound dumb? I think they sound smart. Now, again, I've told you before, I said it earlier, I'll say it again. I still have questions about Scott Jenner based on some of the past statements that he's made. Although I actually watched the speech, and if you didn't, then, you know, maybe you should. The speech from about 4 years ago. I think Adam Kissel's a great add to this board. I'll be honest. We should be glad to have him. Every time he opens his mouth, something interesting happens. He's smart. He's informed. He's passionate. He's asking good questions. I think he's a good addition to the board. Judging him on the basis of performance and his CV. And I'm not the only one who thinks so. Dick Baker.
It's obvious that we've got new trustees that bring an awful lot of background research and particularly what you've been talking about, Trustee Kissel. You have tremendous knowledge and so forth in this field.
After a meeting, Dick Baker was impressed.
I'm also going to echo Trustee Baker's comment. I do appreciate the perspective that you're bringing with the research. I think that's valuable for making our university better. As I tell my staff every day, and I operate on this board, is my premise is continuous and never-ending improvement. And I think West Florida has been on that journey. And if your ideas and concepts are in line with that concept, you'll have me as one of the players to move forward.
So the two most senior voices on the board, the holdovers, Dick Baker and Alonzi Scott, are both impressed with Adam Kissel and maybe some of the other trustees as well. That was after their first meeting. I don't think they're just being political about this. I think they're actually saying what they believe, which was my opinion as well. So I know there's been a lot of community distress over this, and I share a lot of it, okay? But you always want to look at the evidence. Does the evidence justify your distress? And at least in the case of Adam Kissel, it does not. More on this next hour. 656 News Radio 92.3, John Pickens has traffic for us.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10, I-110. Even 98 going through Windhaven Beach, both east and westbound are totally good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
The cost of healthcare is all in the news. Tune in tomorrow at 10 to the Pensacola Expert Panel, as ProHealth will be the guest. They'll be discussing the ProHealth Medical Membership Program, as well as they are now offering 20 affordable on-site ultrasounds. Find out how ProHealth can help you take out the stress from the cost of healthcare tomorrow at 10 with ProHealth on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Find out about WSRE's 34th Annual Wine and Food Classic coming up this weekend. This marquee walkabout tasting will feature local chefs and the Crescent City sounds of the Corey Lennett Zydeco Band. Sip and sample Creole-inspired cuisine and vote for your favorite dish. Hear more about this event and other happenings from WSRE-TV Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Cops, Cars, and Crawfish is back on Saturday, April 12th. It's a car show and a crawfish boil to benefit the Escambia County Sheriff's Foundation. The gates at Five Flag Speedway open to the public at 10 a.m., and you can bring your family out to wander around and see some incredible cars. There's trophies, door prizes, a 50-50 raffle, a free movie on the big screen, the People's Choice Awards, and of course, crawfish. The Cat Crew's going to be there. We'll be bringing the fun and games. We'll look forward to seeing you at Cops, Cars, and Crawfish 2025.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Saturdays, you get The Garden Line Encore at 9, At Home with Gary Sullivan at 10, Swan Capital at 1, Let's Go Pensacola at 4.
All who gain power are afraid to lose it, even the Jedi.
.658 News Radio 92.3, wet all around us this morning, bad storms over Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama, except for on the panhandle of both states where it's clear, just like it is here, mostly clear. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, police say there were no injuries, but a man is being charged with assault after allegedly driving an SUV into a crowd of protesters outside of a Tesla showroom in Palm Beach County. This happened over the weekend on Saturday. More than 100 people were demonstrating against Tesla and Elon Musk. The driver reportedly claimed that his brakes and electronics failed.
The stuff going on around Tesla and the protests is insane.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.